Welcome to the show, Peter Fraser. How are you, mate?
I'm going very well.
Excellent.
Very well, thank you.
It's been a bit of an award season filling the cabinet for you guys late in the year. So let's work through a few of them. But the Angara going from strength to strength, it seems, mate.
You always feel a bit lucky with some of those awards that they ultimately there's you kind of nice to be at the pointy end and a bit of luck goes your way to kind of drop some of the big ones. We had the Halliday Wine of the Year in August, and then James Suckling's number one wine in his top 100 of Australian wines, which was very exciting, and by Sid Grenache. So we're in two different wines. So. And also both from the 2021 vintage.
So it must have been a stellar vintage for you guys then.
Yeah, it's funny. When I first picked the Grenaches in 21, and as they were kind of coming through, I was kind of a bit worried that I'd maybe picked them a fraction ripe. It was the first of the kind of La Nina years. Oh, yeah. Of kind of cooler, moderate kind of conditions. And so the flavours were kind of, and sugars were kind of ticking along slowly. And I thought, oh, you know, I'll just let them hang. And early on, the wines looked a little bit heavy. Still on skins kind of thing, and then as they'd been in bottle, they were just kind of getting prettier and more beautiful and kind of more showy. So they it's funny how sometimes you, but I think with making kind of the best wines you can, often it's kind of that constant reflection on them and all those little 1% things that you do that or that fear of not getting it right makes you that worrying about them all the time ends up giving you usually a pretty good result.
Well, you've got some great growing conditions and some vines with some good age now, haven't you? Like even that,
yeah.
I noticed the old vine Grenache won the Halliday Wine of the Year, so.
Yeah,
And then the other Halliday Award was that you were the number two for the top 100 wineries. So that's in general, not just picking one wine out. So it's a pretty good spot. It's just while we're on that, where your spot is, you're kind of a little bit out of McLaren Vale, but just a little bit down the track, aren't you? So people need to really put it on their list and seek you out a bit. You're not going to just see a directional sign immediately, you know, turn left, here's Coriel, you know, like it's kind of...
We're definitely that kind of, I suppose, destination winery. We're probably, for the most part, we're in the back northeastern corner, and so most people... would come up the Southern Expressway into McLaren Vale, and we're literally, if McLaren Vale, the town, is the gateway into most of the wineries, we're probably the furthest winery away from the gateway.
In that top corner, left-hand corner.
We're actually the first winery, if you come the what I call the beautiful drive coming in through the Adelaide Hills.
There you go, there's a tip, people.
And we're kind of slightly higher elevation, coming through a town called Clarendon, which is Clarendon's kind of the highest elevation part of McLaren Vale, and then in through Kangarilla and Bluett Spring.
Since I've been out there, you've put a new cellar door in, and won an architectural award. An architectural award for that. So that opened in May 23, and before that, it was really quite a quaint little tasting experience. You know, it was kind of in the back of an old homestead in a way. You know, on the veranda.
It was.
So I'd love to see that at some stage. But it's how many people can you get? You must be able to. The capacity must have gone up a lot since what it
yeah,
was.
Yeah, it has. We've got a license for 150, but don't let that put you off. We've got what I call kind of luxury restaurant style seating, and of which we've got about probably close to 70 seats.
Mm-hmm.
The old house was beautiful and quaint, and we've tried to keep that lovely feeling, but we wanted to have a cellar door that could really help tell our stories. And one of the key kind of pillars to Yangar is that we don't buy any grapes, and that all the grapes come from our estate, which surround the cellar door. And the old cellar door kind of was in a kind of far little corner of the property and didn't really overlook the estate. And so we've actually built a cellar door on the second story of the winery.
Oh, right, yeah.
And so you're able to look into a room which has all our fermentation vessels, all the foudre and Austrian puncheons and amphoras and ceramic eggs. So, and then also look out over the vineyards. And there's also a walkway that the cellar door staff can take you through to actually, especially this time of year, go and see all the grapes going into fermenters and being pressed and being pumped over and all that jazz.
So the winemaking is actually part of the show now.
It is.
Yeah, and
it's something that's really important for us that, you know, as we saw on Four Corners the other day, there's a few too many wines that kind of don't necessarily have a story of provenance. And
yes, I always say that very famous vineyard on 800 Turek Road.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so that makes it very important for small producers to kind of be able to really demonstrate what sets them apart, not only in hopefully the taste of the wines and awards and all those kind of things, but also in the storytelling of kind of what we're trying to do. And we've been very fortunate to be able to, you know, invest in such a great facility. We get great feedback. We also, I think that building has won architectural award, but also in tourism, but also I think it's won both the state and the National Builders Association award for its category as well. So we're rats, and we've got an amazing cellar door team that are really knowledgeable. We've always kind of prided ourselves on the way we conduct our cellar door tastings. I suppose a lot of my travel internationally, I kind of really wanted to have a cellar door that got away from standing at the bar and somebody kind of, you know, pouring wines and you're kind of having a bit of a half chat about the wines. We want to sit you down and really immerse you in what we do and sit down and be comfortable and you know, have a good hour experience of you know, diving into the wines.
And you really did that from the start. And now COVID has changed everyone's way of doing it really to that. So now it's completely what customers expect and prefer, because it's even though often you're paying for your tasting, you're getting so much value for what is actually a small amount of money for an hour's entertainment and tasting experience.
Yeah, exactly. And the good part is that it forces wineries to train their staff and be able to, the good ones to then, dial into, what they've got to tell you about the wines.
Yeah, love it. It's well done, and it's obviously the vision has come to life, and it's been a thorough success, which is great.
We're slowly kind of getting there, and it's a bit like I always say to people, it's a little bit like when you go to the brosser, you know, you, if you want to go and visit Henschke, you've got to kind of make quite a decision, because they're, you know, up in Eden Valley, and they're quite a ways from the main drag, and you kind of say, well, we're going to really treat ourselves and go out here, and especially if you have made that time to make a bit of a drive, you want to be able to sit and go, wow, this, I'm glad we came out here.
Have a thorough experience. And and I agree. Yeah. And then you haven't got busloads of people coming, and, you know, groups who are really there for just the day out to, you know, get on the gas a bit, and they're not really. And they unfortunately they take up the time of a good sell it all person, even, who then really wants to get over to the table where the people who are genuinely interested in your product and your story.
Exactly.
I like that.
It's interesting. We did some stats when we were trying to work out how we would, how many kind of our seating arrangements. And we actually had, I think it was 70% couples, and 10% on top of that, I think it was 10 or 15% fours, groups of four. We've kind of gone, probably those groups of fours have increased a bit. Now we've got more space. But, yeah, we would say that probably 80 to 90% of our visitation would be a small, intimate group, so which just keeps it a lovely kind of feeling to the place as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's sort of like you're with like-minded people in one way.
Exactly. I had our UK importer with us yesterday, and he was saying these are really interesting. He called them thinking people's wines, in the fact that there's such intrigue in the wines. But then he looked around Celador and he said, and look, these are they're very kind of they make you think about things as much as being very hopefully enjoyable. Kind of
take a minute to look at it and think about it, rather than just drink it as such.
Exactly.
Pete, we've had a question in from one of our regular listeners, Christopher, and he has asked, are any of the Grenache vines that you have on the property, any of them bush vines, and what would they sort of come up, where would we see them in bottle, if so?
We have, interesting, I'll give you a little stat that a lot of people would find interesting, is that I'd say that Grenache, well, the next pit is not a stat, it's just a guesstimate, but Grenache takes up a large part of the conversation in McLaren Vale, and especially over the last few years, probably thanks to us and a few others. Grenache is only about 6% of the region. In plantings, it probably would have all been planted as bush vine, and a lot of it was planted in Blewett Springs in the original odd plantings as bush vines, because a lot of that happened in the 40s and 50s. There was free available of labour, but people didn't have a swathe of cash to be putting in trellis and kind of
that
thing.
Makes sense, yeah.
And also there was, in that area, there was a lot of sand and or pretty harsh kind of soil that didn't really suit other horticultural pursuits, because there wasn't enough water. And it also didn't kind of suit grazing land. Sand's not much chop generally for pasture.
Cattle or anything either.
And there was a large influx of Italian migration into McLaren Vale, and Grenache produced this lighter, more kind of easier drinking food, kind of wine, food friendly wine, and so they kind of ended up, a lot of those grape vineyards would have got pulled out. We have bit over 17 hectares of Grenache that is planted in 1946, and it is as still planted as bush vine. Mm-hmm. Some people have converted theirs into to putting it on a wire, but we've always felt that having it as authentically as a bush vine is really important. The reason being is it spreads the fruit out in a three-dimensional pattern, mm-hmm. which means that it gets better sunlight, it gets better airflow for disease prevention. And in given the kind of, I suppose, relatively scarceness of Grenache, we went to planting. We could see the conversation of Grenache growing, and we planted a similar amount of Grenache in about 2007. So we felt that as mechanisation and kind of mass production of things becomes more and more, that the niche of kind of bushfire, hand tended, hand kind of made things are going to become more and more sought after, that the story of bushfire and Grenache would probably flourish. Mm. So and we'll probably continue to plant more Grenache over the years it's still not a mainstream variety, but it's one that I think will continue to gain in popularity, and we just need to kind of follow that carefully, not to get into any oversupply issues.
Yeah, well, it seems you can do a whole lot of different things with Grenache, and they speak about Chardonnay being a varietal that can really have a whole lot of winemaking techniques thrown at it. But the way you treat your Grenache is not just, one-dimensional that some do. Obviously it's something that, as you say, you monitor, but you're kind of well set to go, right, well, this style's really taking off and this is becoming really popular for whatever reason. And you can sort of head down that and supply that demand.
Yeah. It's for the most part, there's a bit of a style that's set by the estate and the concentration of flavour and the way the kind of, it plays itself. But yes, as the young, when you've got young vines, those younger bush vines give you a bit more juicier, more primary fruit that's a little bit softer in tannin and, makes great rosé, and it makes an early drinking. It was a preservative-free Grenache, but we've actually probably going to go to just making it just a bit more conventionally, which I think's great success. That preservative-free conversation was. This is a good example of what you said about, doing different things to what people are driving for. In 10 years ago, there was lots of conversation and people were very interested in wines with less preservative.
Yep.
And then I think they realised that it does give you some limitations to the way you make a wine. We're certified organic and biodynamic, so we don't use very much sulphur anyway. So we're kind of better just making the best wine we can to that particular style. So, and then we've also, because of the success of Grenache, that we've chased the white Rhone varieties, including Grenache Blanc and Grenache Gris. There'd be many of your listeners that probably wouldn't even realise that there is a white skin and a kind of grey skin.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Grenache mutation that's come from the areas of Châteauneuf-du-Pape and Priorat in Spain. We've got all the other kind of Rhone whites and reds, and we do a little lovely little blend called Noir, which is a Grenache, predominantly Grenache, but then there are Rhone varieties like Cournoir and Cinsault, and the Spanish variety Carignan. Which are all very opulent and fragrant and very lovely, slightly lighter styles, and they blend beautifully together and make for great kind of I call lunchtime wine.
Yeah, I was going to say it sort of feels Mediterranean, a bit like your climate is, right? It's sort of that wine totally. Feels like that sort of food match.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Totally that.
Hey, I'm interested about the pick pool. You know, that's something yeah. that Coriel put one in. That was probably the first one I became aware of in you guys. So it obviously suits the region, the climate.
Yeah, it does. It's interesting. I think we got our cuttings from Coriel.
Okay.
And I think we've given them a few things along the way. It was nice to be able to get one back. And it's really interesting. I've been doing a bit of research on pick pull from McLeod Vale and all the wine reviewers, there's now about five or six of them in McLeod Vale, and they've all had really great favourable reviews. If you look at the French pick pull area, the famous pick pull de Pennay, is actually not a very big area. And I was reading an article recently by an English wine writer about the success of peak pull, in that it all has a very similar kind of profile. Obviously, winemakers have some influence on, you know, a good one and a lesser one or a bad one. But for the most part, there's a saline-y, fresh, savoury kind of, just absolute drinkability to peak pull. And I've tasted all the ones out of McLaren Vale, and they're all really delicious. You know, you think of the weather that I'm assuming over in Victoria, you've been having similar kind of beautiful.
It's been great.
End of summer, kind of early autumn style weather, and just sitting out in the sunshine with a glass or bottle of pick pull is just fantastic, fresh and delicious, and not overly fruity, but just enough just to keep you intrigued and interested. So we started making, when we planted all the varieties that were pitted in the Chateau Neuf de Pape area of France, and Pick Paul is one of those. And we original intention was just to kind of put it into our white blend. But it started to shine on its own. And I really think there's a bit of oversupply out in the world in Shiraz, and I was kind of thinking, you know, we've got some blocks that would probably, you know, that we were selling as grapes that we could kind of make available to making something else. And so we've actually grafted over some more pick pull, because we really think it's a great opportunity for it moving forward in the next few years.
Yeah, really interesting. And one day everyone's going to be able to pronounce it, right, when they read the label.
Exactly. But at least it's easy to say. It's one of those. And I think because for the most part, some people have heard of Pick Pull de Pennay, there's something that they might get a head around.
You know, it's one of the varietal names that really tells you you're speaking with someone from South Australia, particularly regional. So there's a couple of words that are kind of telltale signs for non-South Australians that you. That's one of them I'm putting on my list. Hey, we've had another question from Kim about the pH that you chase for your Grenache, and I guess there might be some differences between old and new vine and all that sort of thing, but have you got an answer on that one?
Yeah, one of the interesting things about Grenache is that it never requires acidification. Shiraz, generally in McLaren Vale, kind of gets, as it ripens, to get the flavour right, generally metabolises the without getting into a crazy chemistry lesson, it metabolises and out while the sugar's ripening, and which would leave the wine dangerously exposed to kind of microbiological spoilage or tasting quite sweet and kind of flabby. Grenache has this, especially our block seems to be a bit accentuated, but I'm talking to my mates that make great Grenache, like Steve Pannell and in the Vale and various others, that, you know, these old vines just, they don't seem to, kind of the pH doesn't seem to change much, and they have generally kind of what I call white wine pH, which is kind of how the, again, without getting too intense in the chemistry of it all, pH just really livens up the vibrancy of the wine. They don't have incredible amount of acid itself, but it's just the way that the acid in there affects. And that is like a volume control to the tannins.
Okay, right.
And so we kind of, there's not really too much in the winemaking that we do. It's just important in our picking decision. So when we pick, because we don't want to pick too early when the acidity is too searing. And we also want to be, though, in that spot where it's got that, what I'd call tension or raciness, where you're really showcasing the kind of shape of the wine, i.e. through the, you know, the gentle extraction of the fine tannins that we're looking for. So it's a fascinating part of Grenache, and I think it's one that transposes it in a little bit to Nebbiolo in terms of,
okay.
I find it very interesting wine to drink because of the array and shape of tannins and the enjoyment that I get out of the physical nature of tasting those wines.
Wow. Good question, Kim. that was, yeah. But we've just about run out of time, which is just so easy to do when we have you on the show.
Yeah.
So sorry about that. But, mate, unreal. I think let's just remind people. So coming in from Adelaide Hills to McLaren Vale, if you haven't done that, maybe work out a way you can do that next time and drop in. Mate, you must go to Yangara. Obviously, people can find that pretty easily when they want to look it up. So we don't need to give the address as such, but...
And we have a good booking system.
Okay.
You can just hop online, and I would suggest, because we've got some rock star little spots in the cellar doors where we've got, you know, plenty of seats, but there's some kind of golden spots.
If you know, you know, door. Right?
And if you know, and they're not for specialist kind of kept, well, they can be sometimes, but for the most part, that booking will make sure you get, you know, some of the best seats in the house.
That's a perfect thing. So Yangara, yangarra.com. So that's where you get all the booking and a bit more information. You can, obviously, you've got an online store and all that sort of thing, but it's to come and enjoy the experience, isn't it? And, you know, thankfully your wines on the whole are really quite well distributed through the big guys even. And so to come out and experience it and then be able to top up beyond that is a great thing. So, Peter, let's not leave it so long since speaking. There's too much ground to cover because you keep doing really good things.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you. It was great to talk to you, Simon, and the listeners. So thank you for all tuning in.
Excellent. Well, we'll hopefully send some Melburnians over your way, right?
Sounds great. We look forward to having you.
Good one. Thanks, Peter. Have a good afternoon.
All right. Thank you.
See you, mate.
You too. See ya.